This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas on the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas co-host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I am your second Bad Ideas co-host.
And you might have noticed that unlike most shows, which begin with the dulcet tones of Mr. Zach Valenti doing our top of show announcement, today we are distinctly sans Zach.
We are. We are missing.
He ran away from the city, and so today we are
to
recording.
The circus. No. He's had a wedding, and we miss him.
But he
will be back soon.
And today we are joined by a lovely guest co-host, the amazing Rebecca Seidel.
Hello. Good to be here.
Producer of podcasts extraordinaire.
At Marvel and at Other Men Need Help, right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Rebecca, thank you. Thank you so much for coming onto No Bad Ideas. Thank you for being
Thanks
here.
Thanks so much for having me. It is an honor to sit in maybe Zach's chair. I don't know where he usually sits.
There is a good amount of shuffling around. But no, we're super excited to be working with you again. We got a chance to work with you. Then the last season of Wolf 359, we produced some pieces together.
Yeah.
And, well, that was great. And since then, you've gone on to produce all of the awesome audio content. So we're super psyched to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's been a minute.
Yeah, nice it has. It's nice to catch up. But that will all have to go on pause because I have a bad idea for you both.
Well, hang on. Should we sort of just like walk through?
Yes,
the
I was
game
about to.
Our...
Yeah.
Okay, great. In that case, then please take it away.
So if this is your first time listening to No Bad Ideas, welcome. What we do here is we find articles, thoughts, opinions, silly things that someone has done from the internet, and then we bring them to each other. So I have a story that these two have not seen before. I'm going to read it to them, and then they will have just 15 minutes to try and turn it into some sort of good story, a movie, a start of a series, a novel, a
comic book.
Yeah. Scratch and sniff, whatever.
A podcast.
We have not done one of those actually on this podcast.
It's true.
Really?
Hilariously. I think we've talked about it in sort of one of our discussions, but yeah. Not really.
So maybe this is an audio fiction series. We'll see.
This might be the time.
Let's see.
Well, it comes to us from NPR. Their strange news section. And it is, you know, a heartwarming story about keeping your word is how I'm going to spin this.
Okay.
Suspect loses bet with cops, turns himself in with donuts.
Okay. So, well...
I have
questions, but do go on. Yeah.
Typically, when law enforcement pursues a suspect who has failed to turn himself in on several outstanding warrants, it takes the dedicated efforts of officers and some tips from the community to finally bring that person in. And it's fair to say that what happened in Redford Township, Michigan this month was not typical. A suspect turned himself in after making and losing a pretty inadvisable bet with the police. Despite being wanted on suspicion of driving while intoxicated, among other misdemeanors, Michael Martin Zeidel was rather inexplicably... Yeah. With a Z, it's fine.
no relation.
He was rather inexplicably corresponding with officers in the Detroit suburbs over Facebook.
Quick interruption. I love sort of the catch-all term of other misdemeanors.
Yes. Covers all manner of sin.
All kinds of things.
And in a particularly audacious taunt, apparently delivered under the alias, this is phenomenal, Champagne Torino, in a private message, Zaydel had an offer for them. If your, misspelled, next post gets 1,000 shares, I'll turn myself in along with a dozen donuts. And that's a promise, he wrote. And I'll pick up every piece of litter around all your public schools. Let's see if you can get those shares. Officers took him up on the bet, posting a screenshot of the message on the department's Facebook page with a plea for 1,000 shares and a little extra tongue-in-cheek urging, donuts, 5 exclamation points. He promised donuts. You know how much we love donuts. It's no surprise what happened next. 1,000 shares in a little over an hour.
Wow.
As of this writing, less than 2 weeks after the post. No, I can't either. It has gotten more than 4,000 likes. He may or may not be a man of his word, cautioned a celebratory post published a mere hour and a half later. Still, the officer who signed that post, Sergeant Dwayne Gregg and Officer Jennifer Mansfield, said it would be only a matter of time before they got their man, whether or not he actually kept his promise. Quote, is it our experience that everyone gets caught at some point? He has drawn a lot of attention to himself, and that makes it hard to hide from reality. And sure, more than a week passed with no sign of Zeidel. It was so much time, in fact, that the police posted a wanted notice for him with his potential whereabouts. Quote, possibly local donut shops, they added, hopefully. But then on Monday, the unexpected happened. This evening at approximately 6:30 p.m., Michael Zeidel made good on his promise to turn himself into the RTPD for his outstanding warrants. He walked in on his own, and not only did he bring the donuts, he brought one bagel.
Wow. Going the extra mile, Mr. Yep. Zeidel with a Z.
The treats could not save him from a jail cell, however. The department told NPR that he was sentenced to serve time in county jail for 39 days with an additional 30 possible if he failed to pay his court fees.
Wow.
So.
Okay, then.
Were there 39 donuts? Could he save one for each day?
Each day? No. Oh, man. That would have been so much better. He only brought 12.
And just to be clear.
Yeah.
If they did not get the likes, it wasn't that, like, what was he going to get out of it? Just, I'm not going to turn myself in. You need to come
and
get me.
If I do not go viral, I refuse.
Yes. So making deals with the police, maybe a bad idea. Mm. Leveraging anything over Facebook shares, maybe
a bad idea.
One bagel, maybe a bad idea.
I don't know. That was the one part of this that I was like, hey, all right.
So I'm going to put 15 minutes on this here timer, and you guys can do whatever you want with this.
All right.
See, and like, to where my brain immediately goes is just sort of this idea of somebody that nobody has any expectation of doing the right thing.
Right.
Having to do the right thing because of a bet. So something like somewhere there is a town, and in that town there is the one local scumbag that just everybody hates. They always do the wrong thing. They're always kind of, you know, getting into the bar fight and, you know, being like drunk and disorderly.
Just like notorious.
Just like everybody knows that that's the local ne'er-do-well.
Right.
Yeah.
And one day, now this is actually, I just realized this is verging a little close to an old television show with Jason Lee. But one day the ne'er-do-well wins $2 million in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of does something that is like, if we get 1 million likes on this post, I'm going to spend my money fixing up the town. And they get it very quickly. And then the entire thing is sort of about how he's trying to now follow up on that, but he can't easily because everybody mistrusts him. Everybody kind of already thinks that he is the worst guy in town.
And he also probably, one would imagine, struggles himself to sort of become that better person.
Right. All the negative impulses are still there.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing I see about this person is they're a very lone wolf type
of course.
Person.
Of course.
Like, if your main motivation is getting 1,000 shares, on Facebook, I'm wondering, like, what the impulse is behind that, why that's the ask.
Yeah. It also seems like it doesn't seem like that high of a number.
Yeah, no, it seems like you should have more ambition, perhaps.
Yeah.
Right. You got to dream a little bigger.
Yeah. To get more viral. And so there may be something in like a version of this where the request is so sad and small that it affects like the cops in some way, or whether it's like an actual like viral ask. And then it's a story of people trying to like make good on this promise, sort of angels in the outfield style. And mm-hmm. then when it actually happens, you know, then someone who didn't expect to have to do anything will.
Alternate pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Some small city somewhere has for years been terrorized by someone kind of like a la Banksy that does sort of these like very ostentatious displays of kind mm-hmm. of street art. But unlike Banksy, something that is like actually like destructive and something that like, you know, will do things that will result in like, say, like five people's new Mercedes getting flattened or something like that. Mm. And so they are actively wanted by the police, but nobody has any idea who they are. They are totally anonymous. And so then one day the police kind of get like a message from them that is, if you do this particular stunt and it gets retweeted 5,000 times, I will give you a clue about who I am, or I will, you know, sort of surrender myself or something mm-hmm. like that. And then it is kind of about the ultimate performance art mm-hmm. is getting the police to do all these ridiculous things online. a la Ice Bucket Challenge, but with...
Yes, but with donuts, perhaps.
Yes. Right, like if the police chief takes a bath in a bathtub full of donuts and it gets, you know, 10,000 likes online or something.
Yeah. I recently started watching Black Mirror mm-hmm. and I think it's the first episode they ever put out.
With the Prime Minister, yes.
Yeah. Yep. That's what this makes me think of a little bit, but... In my mind, it's a little less sinister and more just outrageous performance art of some sort.
Yeah. And I think that probably there would be a sense of escalation, probably a sense of kind of it begins with kind of like small things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if they keep doing stunts, maybe they get additional clues. So then you can add in like the detectives are trying to figure out who this person is, but they're stuck. So they need to do another performance art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like the stakes get higher every single time. And so there's like this incredible pressure to actually figure out who this person is.
And maybe every now and then they don't make it. Like every now and then they do something and it only gets 9,953 out of mm-hmm. 10,000 likes.
And then the person gives a false clue or a uh-huh. misleading clue.
I love that.
Or there's kind of this like, oh, if you... I'll give you another chance to do that clue, but now what you have to do is that much more embarrassing uh-huh. and that much more, you know, somebody needs to be outside directing traffic in a clown suit for 3 hours right. on, you know, the Thanksgiving Day parade or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what kinds of small town embarrassing things are we thinking?
I'm not sure, but I think that there is sort of like, I think it's important that it is in a small town or a small city mm-hmm. kind of because it's important that everybody kind of know each other.
Yeah.
That it isn't just, oh God, some random people in the street are going to see me do an embarrassing thing, but that it is going to be like, oh,
that was my kid's teacher.
Exactly. Yeah. That's Jim yep. from church. Yep. And that's the person that always, you know, gets my meat at the supermarket mm-hmm. that I'm going to have to see every week for the rest of the year. Right. That's my dentist. That's and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I love that too, because that's the kind of thing that will live on in the town's memory forever.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, it is sort of that thing that you will forever have whatever nickname comes mm-hmm. out of this embarrassing experience that this street artist troll is making you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I love this. Who are we going to follow? Is there going to be, like, a team of cops who are going to have to deal with this performance art? Do we want to follow just sort of one person who's maybe like super regulation focused and by the book, and or do we want to sort of alternate between cops and street artists? Like, how do we want to focus this story?
It's a good question.
So there's a world where you just Mulder and Scully it up, where, you know, your protagonists are these two cops, one that is sort of like the new recruit mm-hmm. or new detective.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of, you know, because they're the rookie, get assigned to the case that nobody wants to touch, mm-hmm. which is this street performance troll artist. And right. they're there with the one person that's been on the case for 3 years that nobody likes because they're kind of this nutty sort of, you know, oddball in the police force. And they're sort of like the two that have to kind of be figuring out who it is while the rest of the police force descends into madness.
I could see it. I wonder. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I also want some kind of conflict between people in the who are trying to solve it. Like, one person who just kind of refuses to, like, I'm not going to play into this.
Right.
Like, yeah, ridiculousness.
Absolutely. There needs to be sort of someone that is, this case is going to get solved by proper police work and, you know, hitting the pavement and following through clues, not by, you know,
making your, not by making your siren be like the ice cream truck jingle or something.
Right. No, I quite like that.
Right. You can't stop every traffic stop by yelling "Stop Hammer Time."
Wait, I want that though.
It would make it better, wouldn't it?
Yes. No, and I like that because then that kind of gives it a thing to build up to in the climax. So, like at the end,
this person kind of needs to buckle and do something silly.
And there needs to sort of be this point where, like, whoever their partner is or whoever the other character in the film is, or whatever format this takes, and I think that this could be interesting as a podcast, there sort of needs to be someone that is eventually kind of like, are you not doing this because it isn't proper detective work, or are you not doing this because of your pride? Like, sort of like, let's get down to brass tacks. Like,
Or are you scared of, like, the kind of silliness and attention that this would create, and if so, why? Kind of a thing.
And I think at that person at the end of the day has to do whatever the most ridiculous like absurd thing that there is to do.
Absolutely.
To crack it open.
They are the ones that have to do the one that will go down in history.
Actually be shot out of a cannon or something.
No, and
into
like
the neighboring town.
Yes.
No, and I think that like there will inevitably be that dynamic amongst the police force of kind of whoever the brave souls that went first are. They're going to quickly sort of be like, well, thank God, because after all the crazy stuff that happens, nobody even remembers the thing that I had to do.
The first like, things. Yeah.
That is so old news now.
How are we going to work in donuts?
Well, I mean, I think that there probably is a lot of kind of like recurring things of sort of police slang or police kind of like myths or tall tales. So probably a lot of it has to do with like donuts. They probably like, you know, have to like someone has to drive around one day in like a donut delivery van.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could see a lot of scenes beginning at a drive-through donut
yeah,
shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, totally.
Like that's our place for we that's our starting point.
The Banksy is secretly the guy who works the drive.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. No, and like they're constantly driving there, like speaking out super loudly. Yeah. And then as they receive the donuts, it's like, how do they always know what we're doing? How can they possibly know? Right. And there can be sort of like, what are other things that sort of like are associated with cops? Like one of them has to kind of, you know, take a bath in these things that turns their skin blue for 24 hours or something like that. They're called bulls too, right? One of them has to kind of glue themselves to a mechanical bull and like ride it for 3 hours or something like that. Yeah. Just like a lot of things. They're always kind of like in some way cop oriented, the pranks.
Interesting.
Would be sort of my guess.
I think you could do like a bunch of small town stuff too. Like, you know, they have to get lost in a corn maze or
I've never been in a corn maze.
I haven't either.
It can be very disorienting. I'm here to tell
you. I believe it. Sarah here with the real news.
The insight, yeah.
Your orchard correspondent over here.
Going through the corn maze to find the donut in the middle of the corn maze. It's like the one bagel.
It's like the one bagel. There we go.
Perfect. I like that. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they have to sort of like find the one bagel in like a bunch of donuts.
They have to sort of something do something ridiculous at like a community cookout or like all sorts of
bobbing for donuts.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Like public events, kind
the
of
the town
thing.
Carnival.
Yeah.
Well, the is there fair. Anything else you would like to sort of flesh out about these protagonists in the 2 minutes, 26 seconds you have left?
I would say let's nail down. Is this a movie? Is this kind of a like serial style podcast, or probably more like an S-Town rather of kind of like reporters coming in and being like, this is the title of Descending Into Madness.
Yeah.
I could see that. I feel like this has potential for an audio series because it has these very distinct characters that we can follow over the course of it,
right?
And see how they evolve in some way. To me, that lends itself to an audio story.
I especially look forward to the teaser montage at the end of the first episode where they've done like one crazy thing and the viewer is kind of, or the listener rather, is kind of listening going, wow, like that got really crazy. And then the host can go, oh, you have no idea. Just wait until what's coming. And then the quick montage of Laurel things that are just the cops going like, they want us to do what? Oh my God, you know, get to the mechanical bowl. No, right, quick, get the whipped cream. Where in the corn maze? What corn maze? Donuts, more donuts.
A lot of these sort of small pranks would actually be funnier in audio.
Right, actually,
because
though.
Because then, you know, it's one thing to sort of see like a cop try to pretend to be, you know, a scarecrow in a pumpkin patch or whatever. Yeah. But like to hear it and to sort of get details strategically dropped to you would just make it funnier and funnier and funnier.
Right.
Yeah, because I feel like there could be this visual slapstick element.
Oh, totally.
I like the idea of audio slapstick. Mm. Like, I think we need more of that.
No, totally. And you can do sort of funny things that are like when they get to like somebody, whoever having to take like the bath in the tub full of donuts. It's like, and like description of how it looks. And if you actually want to see it, go to website. But then you get there and the site has been like vandalized by the Banksy style artist and the image is gone or something.
False lead.
Right. Exactly. And you can sort of have like a nice metatextual element with that.
That'd be fun.
Would this, if it were an audio show, would it have a host or would it feel more like we're viewers kind of following the story around?
Man, I kind of want the two leads from Arden to.
I know. I was having that thought.
And tell the story of this town as it descends into madness.
I'm all for more comedy twists on true crime. So, I'm very down. And the hosts could be the detectives, but very down to have hosts.
Well, after everything that happens, they probably get fired. Yeah. And so they're kind of looking
just,
for
like,
a new
independent
job.
Investigators. Well, that was time.
All right.
Oh, man.
I love it. I'm ready to hear this.
Yeah. Where's the Indiegogo? Let's get this started.
All right, dear listeners, let us see what we can do to get that Indiegogo running. And we'll be right back after this.
Hello, everybody. Editor Zach diving into this episode with a quick announcement for all of y'all folks at home who loved Wolf 359. You will love Zero Hours, our new podcast from Long Story Short Productions. More on that maybe later. It's kind of a long story. But what you need to know is that we have a limited run audio fiction miniseries coming out on October 17th. If you want to learn more about that, check out our brand spanking new fresh website at zerohourspodcast.com. Once more, that's zerohourspodcast.com. That's hours with an S to learn more about our new limited run audio fiction miniseries. And now, back to No Bad Ideas.
Welcome back to No Bad Ideas, the show where points don't matter and everything is made. Oh, wait, no, that's the other one. Welcome to No Bad Ideas.
Original game show.
Yes, where we try to take the worst of humanity and turn it into the best stories. And I'm up next with an idea that I don't know if this is actually the worst of humanity, but I think it is definitely a very, very silly notion that a couple of people had and tried to really run with it. So are you guys ready? This is also from the Strange News section at NPR. And dear listeners, if any of you would like to read along as we go through this, links to the stories are going to be in the episode description. So, IKEA to 32,000 people, no hide and seek at our store.
That's amazing.
Oh, I love it.
The article begins. Anyone who has meandered through an IKEA store can see the potential for hide and seek. The gargantuan hollow tubes, the high-rung rugs concealing whole walls, ottomans.
Ottomans, period.
Don't get any ideas. IKEA announced Monday that it will no longer allow games of hide and seek at its stores in the Netherlands.
Wait, pause. It allowed it?
We're getting there. We're going to get there. After more than 32,000 people signed up via Facebook to play at a store in Eindhoven, Bloomberg reports, quote, "It's hard to control," IKEA group spokeswoman Martina Smedberg told Bloomberg. "We need to make sure people are safe in our stores. And that's hard to do if we don't even know where they are." Had the May 16th game gone forward with even a fraction of those who had signed up to participate, they would have broken the Guinness World Record for largest hide-and-seek game ever. The current record involved only 1,437 people in China. Bloomberg also says that, quote, IKEA let a game happen last July in one of its Belgium stores after Elise de Rijk, 29, put it on the list of 30 things she wanted to do before she turned 30. IKEA is like an extremely large living room, she said. Mm-hmm. About 500 people joined that game. And there is a link to photos for that game if you would like to check it out.
I will do that later, 500%. For sure.
But an IKEA spokesperson told ABC News that it was strictly a one-off thing. The 32,000 people in Eindhoven was the biggest group assembled online, but not the only one. And not even the only one in the Netherlands. According to Time,
what is it about the Netherlands?
19,000 people signed up for a game in Amsterdam, and 12,000 wanted to play in Utrecht. And this isn't the first time the company has had to deal with guerrilla stunts at its stores. Not surprisingly, prior to the company's announcements, people on Twitter seemed pretty thrilled about the possibility of hiding in furniture. All right, so 32,000 people wanted to play hide and seek in IKEA.
Woof.
And the company had to put its foot down. Just get
this is so wholesome.
Timer going.
I love it so much.
15 minutes on the clock starts now.
Oh man, if only like that movie Hide and Seek hadn't just come out.
Yeah, Ready or Not.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. Because I just saw that about two nights ago, and it's very good, by the way.
Ooh, that's good to know. Because that's sort of the spin on it, is that like you think it's sort of this fun, like this group of friends sign up for, you know, a massive game of hide and seek in a giant IKEA-like warehouse, and then it's the most dangerous game.
Sure, sure.
Just things go wrong at every turn.
Oh, yeah. Then it's just we truly turn IKEA into the horror movie that it is when you are not quite sure how far away you are from the exit.
and when you lose your group.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all
you're
of a sudden.
Just to follow those arrows.
You may as well just like head back to the meatballs because like you're not going to find them.
Yeah,
again.
You're just kind of like, I'm just going to hang out here next to the Erktorp and just wait.
Just wait. Oh, man.
32,000 people.
That is many people. I don't know that many people.
Yeah, that is about 10 times the entire population of the university we all went to.
Yes.
All playing hide and seek at the same time.
I cannot imagine just like our entire university population all playing hide and seek at the same time.
I want to.
I mean, that'd be great.
And there's like, for me, it's kind of, so is it everyone except one person hiding and one person looking?
Yeah, who's the seeker?
Yeah, who's,
or is it one person hiding and whoever gets it?
Like in sort of grappling with like the real version of this and not whatever made up thing we're going to do, I think, you know, you'd have teams, right?
Sure.
Yeah, having one seeker would just be extremely cruel.
That would be awful.
Oh, no, you know how you do it. You do it, speaking of our university and games that people played there, you do it humans versus zombies style, where you start off with 31,999 seekers and one hider. But if a seeker gets tagged by the hider, now they're also a hider.
I would flip it. So you have one seeker, and then as you find people, they are then brought on to the seeking side.
Got it. Got it. That makes more sense.
I just had a vision in my brain of zombie IKEA.
Ooh.
And I don't know if I can come back from it.
It looks remarkably probably similar to regular IKEA.
Yeah, no. Did you guys see Warm Bodies? Zombie romance thing that came out.
It looked really interesting.
It is. I think it's quite a sweet little movie. We spend a fair amount of time at the beginning, like, in an airport that's been taken over by zombies, and it's just like zombies sitting at an airport bar, zombies sort of shuffling around in front of a plane.
Zombies waiting at the baggage carousel forever
endlessly.
And ever.
It actually like makes it, there's like some visual comedy played with like zombies just looking around an airport store kind of a thing. And so if you had them in IKEA, I imagine it would just be zombies like having a nap on the bed.
Right. Yeah.
Zombies sort of, you know, shuffling through unassembled chairs.
Or just like zombies eternally going back and forth between two beds, trying to figure out which one they want to buy and never deciding.
Zombies eating $2 meatballs.
Yeah. Except they're free because now that money no longer exists.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
That's true. Anyway, you have 11 minutes.
Oh, great.
Oh, boy.
Cool.
We got much like trying to wander through the maze of IKEA. We went off on a tangent.
You got a little distracted. Yeah.
No, they were good. They were good tangents.
No, but very, very good tangents. Quality tangents.
And I would be down to do like a zombie survival story set in an IKEA.
But like the world's biggest IKEA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it actually ends up, you have a group of people who... What would be interesting to me about it, who, you know, maybe find themselves in this space and it is much nicer than their normal lives. Like they all have shit apartments and, you know, boring day jobs, feel very ground down. The apocalypse happens and they sort of hole up in this IKEA and it's actually incredibly pleasant and freeing.
Yeah, just extremely pristine and...
Yeah, and then it's kind of about like...
And really, what else, like, what do,
what
you
else
need
do you need
that the
right?
IKEA can't provide?
Indeed.
Like,
and
once
so,
you get down to that, like storeroom level, they've got everything.
Got everything.
Right there.
Yeah.
So then, like, their motivation shifts from a survival story to, like, maybe let's keep this thing going. Like, maybe send the National Guard over that away.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing going on at the IKEA.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. They're just decided to build a whole new life.
Yeah.
You gotta rebuild civilization.
IKEA actually gets to become the utopia.
Why do I feel that this is going to like a Synecdoche, New York kind of place very quickly?
Because you know me.
Of just kind of like suddenly the protagonist is directing people and kind of making them, you know, reenact these scenes of domestic tranquility in the living room sets.
I mean, it could go that direction. Or, you know, it could be... you know, sort of a more Shaun of the Dead kind of a vibe.
Ah, sure.
Where, you know, you have a group of people who are in this survival situation, but they just kind of want to stay in this incredibly pleasant space.
Voluntarily sort of trapping themselves there.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess the question would be, like, does this sort of follow the track of a traditional kind of zombie movie where... you know, a lot of people are going to die and there's, you know, a lot of tension and carnage, or is it going to be, you know, sort of like a Zombieland kind of a vibe where it's a lot of fun and kind of everyone is safe until they aren't.
Yeah, you know, kind of a thing. Sort of like the rules of zombie killing and right. all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. In my mind, goes more towards hidden horrors.
Ooh, okay.
They just find in IKEA. Or when we were talking before about there being one seeker versus groups or whatever. In my mind, I'm seeing this through the eyes of one person who's seemingly alone in an IKEA. Ooh. And it could be that the side story is that there are these people who are in the zombie apocalypse or whatever is happening in the outside world, finding refuge in IKEA. But there's one person who doesn't see everyone else.
Oh, boy. And who thinks they're on their own.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then you kind of have like the good bits of the I Am Legend Will Smith movie of kind of him living by himself and like arranging mannequins to have like a semblance of
like normalcy.
Companionship. Yeah. Normalcy, yeah.
Ooh, and then you could even do this movie without any zombies, because if you're following this guy and there's this presence that he's running away from and can never quite see, but then it turns out to be other humans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And do we ever see this one protagonist and all these hidden people actually interact or see each other? Or does it feel like they're kind of the hidden presence throughout the whole thing?
I don't know. I think I feel like, especially if it's a film, you would need to pay that off eventually.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a way you could do it where, you know, it's just these unseen forces and we never know.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that if you never see them, then you kind of need to pay it off in a different way by kind of it being a movie that is like, oh, no, surprise, this is actually Apocalypse Now. And you are actually sort of seeing this man's kind of descent into madness. And he is going to turn into way worse of a person and way worse of a monster than the things that are chasing him. And eventually kind of anything that he's running away from is so much less worrisome than the things that he's doing. But of course, for that to work, he probably needs to like find another family or something that he can then terrorize or something.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
Yeah. I wonder, how we manifest the sort of hidden forces that this person is seeing. Like, I really like the idea of, you know how IKEA has these very specific furniture setups?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then one day he goes in and like a couch is just like slightly tilted.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like slightly off, but enough that it's just horrifying.
Right. The drop leaf table has gone from like down to up.
Yes.
No, I love that. And sort of, you know, and it's just enough that he can kind of keep staring at it and being like, I'm pretty sure I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this can be like a very meticulous person.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at a certain point, you have to become a very meticulous person if you're going to survive the coming of
the
shadowed ones or whatever, you know, the monsters are in his mind.
Yeah. Like, this is somebody who goes through every detail before the end of the night, making sure all the chairs are pushed in.
Mm-hmm.
And all the dishes are put away.
I like it. Yeah, I like it
too. Did you, either of you, I guess, there's a, I think it's a Quiet Please episode, which is a old radio program that's awesome. Called, I think it's called Adam at the End of the World.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where it's, there's basically, it's like this giant nuclear war fallout apocalypse happens. And it's a narrated by this guy who is one of the only survivors of a completely irradiated Chicago, but he finds himself sort of trapped in a warehouse with these two other characters who are feeding him a lot of information about what's gone on outside. And it becomes sort of this sinister play of like, is the doctor telling him the truth kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very, 10 Cloverfield Lane kind of a setup of sort of, wait a minute, are you protecting me or are you manipulating me? Because,
and that's what, like, if he met a family, I feel like it would be a good idea for, you know, if we're going to have him sort of turn, that like he meets a couple people and then tries to tell them how it is. And it's just a, like a little bit off and a little bit strange.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah. And that there is sort of this very real kind of paranoia in him of, wait a minute, how I know all the extraordinary things that I had to do to kind of be able to end up here alive. How are you all here? Still?
How did you get here? And what are you doing with me?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You're collaborating with the enemy or, you know, you were just sent in here to flush me out.
Right.
All right. Is this a movie? Is this a very creepy Stephen King book? Is this a slow burn radio show?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it could work in a lot of different media, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think so too.
Is there something that like is calling out to you in particular, Becca? Or
when you said creepy Stephen King book, that kind of spoke to me.
Ooh.
But I don't know.
There is something about like having that like third person limited perspective of just like you're following this guy and picturing everything through the prose. And like that way you get all the backstory of how he got to the IKEA and survived the apocalypse. And it's very like it's a very integrated way to do it.
Although, you know, what might be fun if it was a graphic novel or a comic book, when you get to that moment where he's kind of noticing that the chair is folded in a different way.
Right.
As he's kind of having this moment of like, oh, God, hang on a second. You as the reader can kind of like
you can
flip and kind of look at him and be like, oh, no shit, it is different.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can have moments when you're sort of as you flip back, you're now that you're tuned into that, you're noticing other things moving slightly that he isn't sometimes catching.
Ooh, I like that.
I really like the idea of a graphic novel for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you are suddenly kind of having this. I think that there is something to kind of having visuals that objectively do let you know, no, there is something else in there with him.
Right.
But not being, but only having sort of like his subjective
understanding
ideas of
what
it is.
Yeah. No, and it would be like narrated by him. You'd have the boxes. And
yes,
stuff.
Absolutely.
Ooh, I really like that a lot. If Brian Michael Bendis wants to write a horror book, he should do
there
that.
There he goes. Is that in an IKEA? Yeah, is that in the Netherlands IKEA?
Oh, man. What's up with the Netherlands?
That's just the real question.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't our IKEAs this fun?
I know. Why have there not been hosted events at the IKEAs?
I will say, let's remember the one where they actually had the game of hide and seek was in Belgium. Give Belgium its credit. They are the ones that were not sticks in the mud. Netherlands were the ones that kind of went, no.
Classic.
No, no fun shall be had.
Man, I'm just loving this idea of you see the protagonist and like, oh no, there's something behind you, but in graphic novel form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, just sort of like there's something that you are not noticing, sort of creeping in behind you. So that is time. For the record, I love that we were able to take a story about kind of a hardened criminal and turn that into kind of a fun romp. But then the story about all the people wanting to play hide and seek kind of went into end of the world zombie apocalypse survival horror.
What does this say about all of us?
Very good things, I think. Very, very.
At least creatively, very good things. Yes. In other regards, perhaps not. But we will be back to talk about even more things right after this.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to No Bad Ideas. I am here with Sarah and with our amazing guest co-host, Rebecca.
Hello.
And as usual, when we kind of have outside souls that brave the depths of the No Bad Ideas underworld, we want to talk about what is going on in their world out where there is still sunshine and blue skies and those things that we have forgotten all about while we record in this basement studio. So we were talking during the break about something that you've been finding both, I guess, interesting and difficult recently in your life, Rebecca.
Yeah, a little bit of a quandary, I suppose. And I feel like this is a thing that a lot of people experience working creatively.
Mm-hmm.
But I've just been thinking a lot about how I work in audio a lot. So my day job is working at Marvel, producing podcasts there. So constantly in that space,
right.
Figuring out stories, recording, editing, all of that wonderful stuff. And it's amazing. And I'm really grateful for that. And then additionally working on various independent audio projects and doing various audio things to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine a fair share of logistical things to make that happen as well.
Yes, absolutely. I don't want to calculate how much time I spend looking at my calendar. When I think about that, it makes me really sad. So yeah, just a lot of working, coordinating. What am I trying to say? Yeah, so I just feel like I'm very immersed in the podcast world.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm not writing, editing, sound designing, I'm on the subway going between things and listening to podcasts.
Right.
And then when I'm not doing that, I also...
You have your non-day job,
yes,
where you're also producing things in audio.
And then exactly. Like your Sundays where you run a podcast listening group is my understanding.
Yes. And so, yeah, I gather people once a month to... There's this thing called Podcast Brunch Club that is amazing. There are chapters all over the world. And basically every month there's a theme with various podcast episodes attached to it from different shows. And everybody gathers after listening to the podcast and talks about it. It's basically like a book club, but that podcasts. I can share links to that at the end of the show. But all that to say, when I'm not working on podcasts or listening to podcasts, I'm talking about podcasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot of kind of saturation of the same medium throughout my life.
Yeah.
And I feel in some ways great about that because I feel like I'm a wealth of podcast recommendations for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I understand the medium and the space, even though there's obviously more to learn and more things to create in it.
I would say that you have one of the more... encyclopedic knowledges of kind of what is going on in the current podcast sphere out of anyone that I know.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I feel like it's also like being on podcast Twitter is a thing.
Yeah. That is a very true statement.
Yeah. And so that's another way where I feel like I'm immersed in that world and kind of have a beat on what's going on.
Yeah.
In that world. But then when I sit back and think about it, in my creative life, wonder how I can, with all the time I spend on those things, really look beyond the audio world and take inspiration from other places and find time to just watch and read and other things that would bring me joy and also creative inspiration. Yeah. My question is basically, how do I expand into other media while still staying immersed.
As plugged in,
yeah,
as you
as
are.
Plugged in, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think, a very, it's something that is very relevant to our lives and kind of a very tricky bomb to disarm.
Yeah.
But which we have found there to be a very simple, intuitive, deceptively easy solution, which Sarah will now explain in detail. And I'm just going to take notes here on this thing that I already know for no reason.
Right. Well, what you do is you stay in that single medium that is consuming your life and just don't look anywhere else until it burns you out and ruins your psyche.
Yep.
And you lose friends, lose jobs.
Yeah.
You just come to hate the thing that has consumed you. And then you can go to another medium and do the same thing all over again.
Don't need to clean your house if it burns down.
Yep. That's the trick.
Oh,
no,
this all makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
in seriousness, I feel that as, and I'm not nearly as plugged into all things podcasting as you are. And I guess I would ask just like, do you feel like you should be watching or reading other things, or do you like sort of feel a lack for different kinds of stories that, you know, you love but maybe aren't getting a chance to listen to?
I think I worry I have blind spots and not knowing what those other stories are.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because I don't know, there's so many amazing things to listen to out there that I feel like I can just find anything that I want or any kind of style of storytelling. But I know there's so much more out there. Like, not that I don't watch any TV or read anything,
right?
Like, but I feel like I do have blind spots in just my brain wiring by just listening to stuff all the time.
No, and absolutely. And I think that there is also a very real phenomena where I think creative people communicate in large way through sort of this lingua franca of commonly consumed items that we all sort of like have a lexicon of.
Yeah.
And when you're sort of a member of a community, it does tend to get kind of like very laser focused into kind of like, well, you know, it's like if there was, if you imagine this episode of More Perfect, but we threw in kind of a overcoat sense of humor with just a little bit of Planet Money facts obsession. That's more or less what it feels like. And you're able to kind of run the mental simulation and go, oh, yeah, I think that I have an interesting sort of idea about that. But then every now and then, even within sort of your own community, all of a sudden you find yourself in a group discussion and somebody kind of goes, you know, you guys read The Circle by Dave Eggers, right? It's kind of like that. And everybody else nods along and everybody else is like, oh, totally. And you're like, oh, God, when's the last time that I ever read any Dave Eggers books? Like, when's the last time that I sort of picked? Is that the hot book? Wait, is that like last year's hot book? Like, how many hot books ago was this? Am I how behind am I? Is
5.
Oh, God. And yeah, and they're, and like, I think that those moments, whenever they happen, they absolutely sort of take a wrecking ball to my confidence about my sort of development of my, sort of like critical consumption of art
and sort of being sort of a good creative person who is challenging yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I definitely have that feeling. But I've sort of come to, at least that I sort of work in peaks and valleys of like hyper focus on something and letting other things go. So there was a period in my life where like I would have read the new hot Dave Eggers book at the time. That book was What Is the What, which is many Dave Eggers books ago. And I was very hyper-focused on literature and was not really paying attention to a lot of movies. And then, you know, Joss Whedon came into my life and television, I was watching absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And stopped reading books, which is not a thing that I recommend you do. and you know, sort of now I listen to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of comic books and I don't watch a lot of television. Like, my television is kind of Great British Bake Off and Steven Universe based. And I think it's okay to have phases and sort of let yourself ride that wave. But I also totally get and have that anxiety of like, I am missing out on something that's important that could help me grow as a storyteller. And I think the only way to really fix that is to just sort of make space for at least one thing in your consumption, like putting, I don't know, about 2 months ago, I put the New York Public Library app on my phone so I could, instead of just listening to things, sort of read ebooks on the subway sometimes. And that's been wonderful.
Yeah. I think that's a really good way of thinking about it, like making those intentional choices to add at least just one.
Yeah, I think the key is that it's just one, because if like, you know, I want to watch all the Oscar movies this year, that seems very overwhelming. But if I want to just make sure that, okay, I watch one thing that people at Venice really liked. Or maybe not Venice, Tiff.
Venice made some interesting choices this year.
They did.
No, and I think that's something that is worth kind of pointing out is so Sarah and I both kind of went through the same college major and took classes with kind of a professor who is one of sort of the most important teachers that we've ever had. And one of their big sort of structural foundational things was if you're interested in working in the arts, you need to kind of be consuming widely of whatever art you want to be an expert of. And her maxim was, if you want to be a great filmmaker, you should be watching 2 movies a day,
every single day.
And you can kind of squint at that and kind of go, you should be consuming the equivalent of 2 movies a day, mix and match mediums as necessary.
Yeah.
Sort of be doing the equivalent of 2 movies a day of podcasting or of, you know,
reading a novel a week.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the part of it that goes unsaid is that there is kind of an element of, well, the zeroth step in that process is that you need to be in a place where you are able to consume.
Take the time to do that. Yeah.
Yes. Because I have done things where 2 years ago, I sort of did a thing where I was kind of like, I was feeling a lot of pressure behind that because I have a lot of interest in one day sort of working in film. And I kind of realized, boy, I've been working in podcasting for a while. My energies have been going in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to immerse myself back into this. I'm going to do a challenge. I'm not going to start with 2 movies a day. That's too much. I'm going to start 1 movie a day for the rest of the year. Let's go. Let's do this. And I saw a lot of really, really great movies, but I definitely kind of noticed that after a certain point, as I got busier and busier, I wasn't really watching them. I was kind of staring at them and waiting for them to be over because
going
my brain,
the motions, yeah.
Yeah, my brain was kind of in this place of, I need this to be over now because I need to go finish that script and then edit that other thing and kind of write that email to the other person. It wasn't sort of in that place of being able to actually absorb effectively and usefully all the stuff that was happening in front of me.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a lot of kind of that of kind of we all, I think, feel pressure of all those great movies that we haven't seen and all those, you know, great novels that we haven't read. I still haven't read almost any Dickens, and I feel really a lot of pressure about that.
You just have a lot of treats waiting for you.
It's
true. That's a good way of thinking about it.
As someone who has read both middling and good Dickens books.
Yeah. And but then there's is also sort of this element of, but you cannot, you know, it's a little bit of kind of going, well, today I'm going to feel happy. No, you can't make a choice about that. You can sort of go, I am going to make a space for this and I'm going to do these things. And at a certain point, you kind of have to go, well, no, today that is not going to happen because I have these other things that I need to kind of maintain first. And I think that there is a lot of kind of how do you find the space to kind of go into other things more than kind of just going, here we go, into other things. Let's go.
Yeah. The thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is just trying to build a routine that's somewhat strict around just things that I'm consuming media-wise and having that be sort of a jumping off point for living the rest of my life. Like if I'm like, okay, kind of like to what you were saying of I'm going to read however much every night and that's just going to be a rule that I have.
Right.
I don't know if that's the best way to go about reading more, but it does at least give structure to it.
Yes.
Right.
Where I know that's what I'm going to do. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think it depends on the person. Like I have definitely tried that in the past of just like, this is just a thing that I do now. And that thing, I do it for about a month and a half. And then, you know, I sort of fall apart on it. But I think, you know, like anything else, if you just sort of make that conscious choice to let something into your life, even if you fall off the wagon a couple times, you will have gotten somewhere and sort of had that sort of refresh of looking at something different, interacting with stories in a way that engages your brain differently, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And you will be, I think, more likely to pick it up again the moment that you, you know, like you were saying, Gabrielle, have space for it.
Yeah. And you know what I found that is nice? I, for a long time, worried. You know, Sarah, you were talking about you have all these treats waiting for you in the future. I definitely sometimes worry that our art-consuming brain is like our language center of kind of you need to get things early because if you don't get them in before a certain point, certain things that could be big foundational art appreciation defining things, you know, if you don't experience those before you're 22, then it's not going to be the same. And mercifully, I found that that is not the case.
Not the case, yeah.
No, I've been thinking a lot recently about, I am by no means sort of someone that really thinks of themselves as someone that wants to go into video games. But every now and then I do play them a little bit. And this year I finally played one called Planescape Torment about 6 months ago. And I recently was thinking about, wow, I haven't stopped thinking about that game.
Yeah.
And I kind of remember like every line of it. Like I kind of remember everything that happened in it. And I remember all the characters so vividly. And I remember sort of all of these very confusing emotions that it caused me to have. And as I have been sort of wrestling with some of the new things that I'm writing, I'm kind of realizing like, oh God, I'm kind of now wrestling with certain things that I got from that game the way that I wrestle with, say, things that I got from Battlestar Galactica, which I watched at an incredibly formative time in my life. So no, I think that like you're absolutely right, Sarah, in kind of thinking, you know, if Dickens is going to be your guy, don't worry. Like whenever you can get around to him, get around to him.
Yeah.
Your brain doesn't calcify in quite that way as much as I sometimes worry that it does.
Yeah. I sure hope not. And I love that idea too of just, you were saying, Sarah, I think exercising different parts of your brain and having just different pieces of your brain spark in different ways. And yeah, that's just kind of beautiful. I think we all need more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely like crave it. After a certain point, it's interesting that you bring up video games because that's often like the impulse for me to sort of, okay, I'm actually going to buy Pillars of Eternity 2 now, and just run through that a little bit because it's relaxing because it's a different kind of experience than the one that I am subjecting myself to most of the time, and you know it exercises a couple different parts of my brain that are you know adjacent to what I'm doing most of the time, but like the fact that they get to sort of sparkle and be activated actually helps me go back to the stuff that I'm writing.
All right, everybody, I think that that is time for this episode of No Bad Ideas, but thank you all so much for listening, and thank you especially Rebecca for
being
here
much.
Filling in for our stalwart co-host Zach.
Thank you, guys.
Rebecca, if people want to find more about your work and more about you, like, what is the best place to do so?
So I'm on Twitter at BeccaHope24, which is a handle I got a very long time ago that I'm kind of like, why? but yeah, that's BeccaHope24.
Nice.
My website is Rebecca-Hope-Seidel.com.
Nice.
Excellent.
And yeah, I think those are the two best places to reach me.
Great.
I work on a podcast called Other Men Need Help, which is basically about society's ideals around masculinity and how men try to ascribe to them, but also hide things in the process. It's a storytelling narrative show. And you can find out more about that at othermenneedhelp.com.
It is a live show coming up, right?
Yeah, we have two live shows coming up, actually. One is at Caveat on October 8th. That's the first one. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have great storytellers lined up if you're in New York City.
I was about to say, like, that's local to New York City. So if you're around here or if you want to be here for a really awesome live show, you should check that out.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right. And thank you all for listening. And we'll be back next week.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.